This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. You can send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Lamont Cole is in the house. He is a councilperson, District 7, East Baton Rouge Parish, and he is also the mayor pro tem in East Baton Rouge Parish. He was elected to that post in January and actually got three Republicans to vote for him. So we'll talk about that and more. And Lamont played basketball at Nicholls State University back in the day under Ricky Broussard. So there's some news today involving athletics. And today, by the way, is the 74th anniversary of the birth of Peter Press Maravich, leading scorer in college basketball history, born on this date in 1947 in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, leading scorer in the history of college basketball, 3,667 points at Louisiana State University, where he is not a member of the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame. Lamont Cole is a graduate. He's frowning at this. Of LSU and wondering why his alma mater would not put the leading scorer in college basketball history into the Hall of Fame, but that's the way it is. They have others who don't have college degrees in there, but they say Pete can't get in because he doesn't have a college degree. And Lamont, I don't think he's going to get one anytime soon.
No, I don't think so.
No. But Lamont Cole is a man about town, and our town has become a town, as we've read repeatedly over the last few days and heard on this show and others, a town where carnage, unfortunately, is the order of the day. And I mentioned in the lead-in today, last year in the United States, there were 19,000 homicides. And if Baton Rouge were to get up to 190, which is possible, unfortunately, that would mean one out of every 100 homicides in the United States of America would be in our city, our parish. And Lamont, you're doing what you can. And I don't know that pointing fingers right now is a way to get things accomplished, because we've been here before. In New Orleans, for example, had 424 homicides in the year of 1994. They got it under control, and now it's trending in the wrong way. But there are some things that can be done and some that can't, and we're trying to find out how to address this. And one of the ways that you're going to do this in a friendly way to our community is this weekend. It's called Peddling for Peace.
Yes,
tell us,
sir,
about that. We'll start there.
But thank you so much for having me and having my dear friend Danielle Sadowa here, who runs Shoppers Value. And so we're just delighted to be here. But Peddling for Peace is an event that myself and a few other members of the community came up with about 4 years ago. We were seeing a spike in crime back in 2017. And so, well, we saw a spike in crime in 2016, right after the flood and right after all of the events that took place in the summer of 2016. And so during the summer of 2017, we wanted to do something to bring awareness to the crime and then say and bring the community together in an effort to say we want to see peace in our community versus crime in the community. And so we had the idea that every little bit helps. And this would be an event where people from all backgrounds and walks of life could come together and ride bikes, and we could pedal for peace. And so we did it in 2017, and we've done it every year since. And Danielle has been a sponsor, and this year she's the lead sponsor, and Shoppers Value is the lead sponsor. So we're really excited and looking forward to it. It's Friday, 6 o'clock p.m. We're going to meet at Shoppers Value on Government Street, which is located at 5355 Government. We're going to ride to Howell Park, and then there we'll pray for those victims we've lost this year as a result of violence, and then we'll ride back.
Right.
And then Danielle's going to serve us some jambalaya, and that's going to be it.
So it's Friday night.
Friday evening, yes, sir.
All right. Well, that's good. And you start where?
We start at Shoppers Value on Government Street, 5355 Government Street.
All right. And for those who just like to show up and ride their bikes?
If you have a bike, we have a whole host of sponsors, Front Yard Bikes, Bike Baton Rouge is going to be there. And we will have some bikes available for those who are in need of bikes through Go Cruising with Kurt Pellicher and Go Cruising. So if you are in need of a bike, you should log on to gocruising.com. That's G-A-U-X, gocruising.com, if you need to reserve a bike for Friday.
G-A or G-E-A?
Excuse me, G-E-A-U-X. That's
there
right.
Go.
Yep. And if you want to reserve a bicycle with Kurt Pellicher, you can do that. And so, yeah, we're looking forward to it. It's always a really good event. And as Danielle said earlier, we take a leisurely ride. We don't ride real fast. It's a nice leisurely ride where folks can talk to each other. And our hope is that they would meet people they don't know.
Well, what about the homicide escalation we're having here? What do you attribute it to?
Well, I attribute it to a whole host of things. One, there's an apathy in various communities. There is hopelessness in various communities. I think a direct result of COVID and folks being locked in the homes for a long time and now coming back out and just trying to figure out their way. Some people have struggled directly as a result of COVID in terms of financial struggles and things of that nature. So there's a whole host of areas that I think have contributed to the spike in crime. And so I think it's important that we do all we can from the small to the large in terms of addressing the crime that we have in our community.
What about availability of guns? We've got a lot of guns.
It's a problem. It's a huge problem. We have far too many guns on the street. And then I think ultimately what it comes down to, in my opinion, again, this is just my opinion, I think that those who are in possession of illegal firearms don't fear what may happen to them if they are caught with those illegal firearms. So I think we have to think about our gun laws in terms of what happens. And I think we have to be very, very deliberate in terms of what we want to do with those individuals we recognize and know are in possession of illegal firearms.
And if they're used, that's a life-changing event for the person using it and the person who is on the other end. It can't be taken back.
You know, I say this all the time. I don't think there are bad people in the world as much as I think there are people who suffered from extreme circumstances and they now make bad decisions. And I think those who choose to make a really bad decision should be punished in a way that others who see what they've done and how they're being punished will think twice before they make that same decision. So I think, you know, and I know this is not popular in some communities, but I think we have to think about how do we interrupt crime and how do we do things on the front end before folks make those bad decisions. But once they do, I think we need to be harsh on crime in terms of those individuals who are choosing to make those bad decisions. Listen, whenever it is not safe for our children to go outside and play, we have a problem. And for me, I have a 2-year-old and a 9-year-old. And whenever I'm sitting at home thinking about what could possibly happen to my children if they go outside and play in the front yard or if they go down the street and play with their friends, then we have to think about those bad actors in our community and how we're going to address that. Law enforcement, the DA's office, the judges all need to be on the same page and hear the cries of the community and hear what we're saying in terms of how we need to address these issues. And again, it's not popular. And again, it's just my opinion. But I think we have to think about that once crime has taken place. Now, prior to that, I'm all for reform, I'm for restorative justice. I'm all for doing things we know work in schools as it relates to helping young people. But I think we have to be harsh once they choose to make that bad decision.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Patrick in Innisfail Estates, you're on with Lamont Cole. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Lamont. I agree with punishment of crimes, but it seems like innocent people are getting punished for crimes they didn't commit. I'm reading in the newspaper about this Capitol Park City. I guess it's like a, I'm sorry, it's Park, it's a bar and a grill.
Yeah, I don't know.
On Florida Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And so the ABC board is wanting to yank their liquor license, but this bar and grill, it looks like a nice establishment from the photos in the Advocate.
Mm-hmm.
It's a business that comes to Florida Boulevard. Why are they paying the price for a crime that happened near their property or on?
All right. What about that?
Well, I think it's getting doing the investigative work and getting down to the nuts and bolts of what happened. I think perhaps the ABC board is seeking to address this issue by saying the incident perhaps started at the bar and grill. Now, I don't know the facts. I don't know the case. But that would be my assumption based on what I've read in the paper, that the incident perhaps started there. Now, I do know the young man who owns the establishment, and I have spoken to him since then, and he explained to me that it didn't start in his establishment. It started in the parking lot two doors away from his establishment. He's not even sure that anything that those individuals were patronizing his establishment that evening. So unless the police or the ABC has other information that may contribute to their decision, I'm not aware of it.
877-217-5757 for Mayor Pro Tem Lamont Cole of East Baton Rouge Parish. David in Atlanta. David, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, in order to cut the crime, it's not, you can't just hire police and build jails. You have to give people a pathway out of poverty and end the hopelessness. Like, the Democrats want free college education. There are many jobs out there that are begging for qualified applicants. We need to go back to what Lyndon Johnson did and have a massive job training program. That-
All right. Do we need education to thwart crime?
Pathway to the future, of course, is educating. I'm a 23-year educator myself. And so, of course, I believe in educating my young people and giving them the skills and tools they need in order to make positive decisions. So, of course, I think we have to do those things on the front side and before crime takes place. But then once it does take place, then we have to do something as well. How we respond to it is going to dictate what happens next.
We'll be back after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster, Matt Doyle producing. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, your number 877-217-5757. Lamont Cole, Mayor Pro Tem and Baton Rouge Councilman, graduate of Terre High, LSU, and Southern, and he is a man who knows this community very well. He played basketball at Nicholls State University, as we noted. And before we get back to the crime scene, there was a big decision yesterday from the U.S. Supreme Court. Looks like athletes will now start reaping the harvest long overdue of their work in college athletics. And if you had had that in place back in your day at Nicholls, who knows? You might have been a millionaire.
Could have made 20. Some money. Could have made some money.
Well, as far as crime, what can the community do and what can government do?
Well, I think first starting with the community, I think that the biggest thing we can do is learn to get to know each other better and work extremely hard to have neighborhoods, again, where we look out for each other, where we are really responsible and take responsibility for what happens in our own respective neighborhoods. And then we start to have those conversations not only in our neighborhoods but across neighborhood lines, where we start thinking about what is it that we want, how do we want our communities to look, and then start working extremely hard to make sure they look exactly how we want them to look in terms of safety, in terms of our schools, in terms of the activities that take place in our neighborhoods. I think that's where we start. What government can do is implement programs or implement job training programs or implement systems that we recognize are going to help people be more successful. Earlier, we spoke about education. I think that is where it starts, and it starts with early childhood education. I think it ought to be mandated, it ought to be a law, it ought to be a responsibility that we take on as a country that every three-year-old child, as soon as he or she turns three, has access to early childhood education. I mean, I think the statistics show us that a child who is educated early is probably going to make better decisions later in life. And so I think that's where we have to begin. And I think government has to work extremely hard to make sure those types of things happen. And then when we start talking about job training, we have to give kids skills. It's one thing to learn English, math, science, and social studies, but it's something completely different to learn a skill a young person can use when he or she leaves high school.
Do we need more police officers? Do we need better trained cops? Do we need to pay them more?
Let me take that in three parts. One, we definitely need to pay law enforcement officers more money if we want them to do such a serious job. But in an effort to pay them more money, we have to think about the type of law enforcement, the type of folks we want in law enforcement, extremely professional, well-educated about law enforcement in terms of who they're going to be dealing with and how they're going to engage the community. So when you talk about training, I always flip that term and say we need to make sure they are professionally developed on how to be professionals when they're engaging with citizens in the community. And so if we, in some areas, we may need a different type of presence in terms of law enforcement, more community policing in terms of boots on the ground, getting to know the folks that they are serving and making sure that there's a relationship between law enforcement and the people they have been charged to serve. And I think we have to think about the service part of law enforcement. You know, it's to protect one, but on the other hand, it's to serve. And so what does that look like? And what do the professionals we have working in law enforcement do once they engage folks who live in the communities that they've been charged with serving? And so, yes, we need to pay them more. Yes, we need more professional development. And yes, we need to encourage our law enforcement and the community to engage in a way that is going to make our communities more safe.
877-217-5757. Still time to get in with Lamont Cole, Mitchell in Sherwood. Mitchell.
And, training. We need more training with the kids.
What about training? What did you say? Mitchell? All right, I think he said training. You just alluded to that. Another listener notes that we're coming up on 5 years in a few days, July 5th. It'll be 5 years since the Alton Sterling killing and the city parish, you being one of the votes, settled on a $4.5 million settlement for the family.
Yes, sir.
That was a long process.
It was indeed a long process. We worked on it for four almost 5 years. I'm happy that we're able to put it behind us and we're able to move forward and think about ways to bring the community together. That was a very polarizing event, and it divided this community in a way that I hadn't seen before as a young adult. But I'm happy to say that there were seven of us on the city council who thought it wise to put this behind us, and we came to a conclusion and an agreement on a number, and we were able to move forward.
It took a while to get to that seven, though.
It did, indeed.
And were there any contributing factors to get to that vote?
Well, I think when we went into executive session with this new council and we were able to hear all of the facts and we were able to lay them out and have a very candid conversation and everyone had an opportunity to be heard what their concerns were. We listened to attorneys from both sides and they laid out the case very, very plainly and they laid out the facts. And once we were able to see the facts and listen to all of the information, we've had a very candid conversation with both sides in terms of a number, and then we discussed it as council members, and we came to an agreement about what that number looked like, and we're able to agree, and so we were able to vote and put it behind us.
Now, we know, based on a toxicology report, there were drugs in Alton Sterling's system. Of course, the officers had no idea of that when they arrived, and one officer handled it appropriately, and the other went rogue, and a minute later, Sterling was dead. Was there a toxicology report on that officer?
At the night of the event, if there was, I don't remember reading the toxicology report about the officer, because the information I was using to make my decision wasn't so much the toxicology report as much as it was his actions when he showed up on the video. And so those actions were highly inappropriate from what I observed. Right. And I think there are members of the Justice Department who said as much. That, you know, the actions of the officer were highly inappropriate in terms of what he did when he showed up.
And I think a drug test was given to Plain Salamone.
That evening? I don't recall is if a drug test was given to him that evening and we had that information and we used that information in making our decision.
But you can tell if it's a day or two later. You can still tell. And it would be interesting if that report were released.
Yeah. It would be interesting if all the information relative to that case was released.
Well, why hasn't it all been released?
Well, I think now that the case is over with, completely over with, and the amount has been settled, it can be released now. I think prior to, there was information being held back as a result of the case still pending. And so now that it's over, I think it will be released.
When you saw that, how did it affect you?
I was shocked. There are so many different emotions I experienced. I was sad. I was shocked. You go through a range. I was angry. I was upset. But more importantly, I felt bad for our city and our community because I recognized immediately when seeing the video that this was going to be an extremely polarizing, challenging time for all of us here in the city.
All right. Now, listener, Tom on Bluebonnet asked your perception of the what Chief Paul, Murphy Paul, is doing to thwart crime. And homicides in particular.
Well, I think he's doing. He has an extremely challenging task, internally and externally, as it relates to addressing the crime that is taking place in our city. Listen, prior to 20, prior to the pandemic, we were seeing a decrease in every aspect of crime, violent crime, homicides, burglaries. We were seeing a decrease, a consistent three-year decrease from the time he took office. Once we got to March of 2020, around April of 2020, we started to see an increase in some of those areas. And so I think he's doing the best he can. He has some challenges internally. I don't think all of the rank and file, and particularly the union, are in support of a lot of what he's making an attempt to do. But I think he's doing the best he can with what he has to work with right now.
Is there any way to unite the chief and in the union, or is that a lost cause?
Well, at this point, I'm always optimistic that there's a path forward. I think if folks are able to sit down at the table, remove the ego, and have a very candid conversation about the type of department we want and then how we want the department to serve this community, I think there is a path forward. But I think it's important for people to listen, to understand, and not listen to respond based on their own personal positions. I think we have to think about the community at large.
Well, Lamont Cole, good to catch up with you. Good luck Friday night with Peddling for Peace at Shoppers Value on Government. And we will be back with more Talk Louisiana, and hopefully we'll have a return appearance from Mayor Pro Tem Cole very soon.
Anytime you want.
Back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We turn the page, and we are now talking about something a bit more pleasant than homicides with Manuel Martinez, who's been a fixture in this community since he opened his shop in 1984, almost 30 years. That's 37 years ago, the year that Ronald Reagan won re-election and carried 49 states. LSU, under Bill Arnsparger that year, went to the Sugar Bowl, went 8-3-1, and Manuel Martinez opened his store, and three times during that period, he's been named the best in the world by the World Congress of Tailors for his designs. And for those who would like to see Manuel, and this is obviously an audio event, but he will be photographed as he already has and be presented in all his glory at talklouisiana.org, where you can hear podcasts every day as well. But Manuel Martinez, you've got to describe the outfit. You're looking very, very summery. It's a beautiful outfit and bright colors, as you usually wear. Tell us.
Well, Jim, this is the time to wear color. I think it brings a little happiness and a little sunshine to folks' faces and puts a smile on their face. I'm wearing today a teal blue sport coat with a tan window pane, a baby blue shirt, and a British khaki trousers with a regimental tie that is a blue tan.
Yeah.
And oatmeal colors. So I think the outfit is very flattering.
Mm-hmm.
Or otherwise, I wouldn't wear it.
It works for you.
Thank you, Jim.
Now, if you were president of the United States, would you wear an outfit like that?
Well, if I was at Palm Beach in a resort, and that was... yes, but not
if you
not,
were in the,
not a president.
If you were in the Oval Office, you would wear something more like what I'm wearing, right?
You would wear something more presidential, which is... the dark suits, the blue, the charcoal, and so on.
And I have my one Manuel Martinez suit. I do have shirts from him, but I only have one suit that he designed in the year of 2005, and I'm wearing it right now. And I am pleased that it still fits, Manuel.
Well, you're incredible, remarkable, because not many people over, 16 years?
Yeah, 16 years. Yeah.
They gain or lost a ton, and you pretty much stay on course. Stay the course.
That's how you stay in business, too, by people putting on the pounds, right?
Well, it's incredible what they've done during the pandemic. Lost 30 pounds, gained 40 pounds. Somebody
some
loses,
people
somebody
lost,
found.
Some people gained, right?
It is that.
They didn't call it the COVID-19 for nothing, did
no.
they?
No.
877-217-5757 for one of our favorite guests. And at times we need to get on the lighter side. And in the COVID age, more people are staying at home, which means they're probably not wearing suits in their living room. And they're conducting business from their living room. And sometimes you never know it. But on these Zoom events, you can get caught if you're in your pajamas. Or even worse if you're Jeffrey Toobin. But anyway... Manuel Martinez, should people dress well for Zoom events?
Of course they should. I had often called some of my clients, and I've seen them on Zoom. And I said, what are you thinking? What message are you sending? You need to inspire people. So dress like things are going to get better. And instead of putting a T-shirt or not even wearing trousers, they, a lot of times I think they're wearing shorts because mm-hmm. you can't see them from the waist. You can't see anything from the waist down. But I think that clothes does something for the individual, even in times that they're down. If you wear a little color, it brings a little smile, a little hope to people's faces.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it, when you get the compliments, you sort of tend to walk up a little straight, especially coming from a beautiful lady like the lady next door to me. Then you tend to, hey, we all have vanity.
We all have vanity. But these people who are in the know, and I've seen it, sometimes people don't look their best. The lighting can be awful on these Zoom calls. So do you have to be cognizant of those kinds of things, too?
Well, yes, you do that. You have to be careful what's going to look better for you, what's going to make you look more energetic. And color plays a big part, a big role on clothes because it can either make you more energetic or can mm-hmm. make you look like you're sick. So, yeah, you got to be careful. You got to know what colors to wear.
Well, we have all these places now to make us look better, look different, and people spend a lot of their expendable income on that because they do want to look good. And in this age, a lot of people are refraining from wearing fine clothes, and I know it, you're gritting your teeth as I'm about to say it. They wear blue jeans to work. Can you imagine that, Manuel? What has this world come to?
Well, look, hey, you know, for years, Jim, I was not a great fan of jeans. I didn't wear them, so I didn't make them. Well, what happened during the pandemic? I got real humble, and we started making dress jeans. You didn't know that.
You're kidding me.
No,
you
didn't know that. No. But they know the jeans that you wear to work. You follow me? So we started making dress jeans, and we started making some polo shirts and some hunting jackets, golf jackets to go with this kind of jeans. So you gotta sometimes find out the message you want to send mm-hmm. to others, and how do you want to be perceived? You follow me?
Right.
If you want to be a leader, you've been to the symphony. What does the conductor do? He turns his back to the crowd because he wants to lead the symphony.
Right.
So don't follow the masses. Try to set high standards.
But
you
adjusted. You've evolved because you've said on this show the only time you'd wear jeans would be in the woods.
Exactly.
And now you're actually designing dress jeans.
I design and make jeans, but as I mentioned to you, they're not work jeans. Mm-hmm. Now this is the kind of jeans you would wear if you want to go to the office or you mm-hmm. on the weekends or whatnot. Yes.
Well, in any major American city, we see these high-rise office buildings. We have some in Baton Rouge, and you wonder what's going to happen as more people are now working from home and they found out they can work fairly efficiently, although I don't think it works as well when you're working from home. But that's the wave of the future, apparently. But the wave of the future would also mean that fewer people would be dressing up to go to work. So I would think your industry is somewhat vulnerable right now.
Well, you might say that, but what I'm finding out that people are still gendered to dress. They're willing to dress, but sometimes they don't have the direction. Now, the suit has taken a hit because it's now sort of treated like a special occasion. Believe it or not, I've never done as many weddings as I did from May of last year to December. We did over 30 weddings, but
really?
that don't mean just making clothes for the groom. That would mean for the groomsman and the best man, the father of the bride, or the father of the groom. So we did well with that. I didn't want to cater to that business in the past because I don't want to be like a special occasion type of place to go to. So the young men were looking for color. They were looking for direction. So the suit is now more of a special occasion type of thing. And we do very well with sport coats, and we're doing very well with the other things I tell you what we're making.
Well, you have made a good living doing this, and there's some other competitors who do nice jobs too in this town and have for years, and you've managed to stay open. But is it more competitive now than it's been before, based on the fact that there may be fewer people dressing up in suits and ties and nice shirts?
You know, unfortunately, and I say that, and I'm being sincere when I tell you this, Jim, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that have to close doors. Not only the restaurants mm-hmm. and businesses, whatnot, mm-hmm. but also in the clothing industry. There's a lot of stores to close. So what's mm-hmm. happened now, I'm getting more people to come to me. Now, Jim, right. I've been in this trade for 40 years. I did a lot of competitions. I won a lot of awards and so on and so forth. Well, now they pay enough because they come in, people coming from different parts of the country. I'm meeting in New Orleans, people from Nashville. 2 weeks from now, I'm going to be flying to Birmingham to see clients and so on. Mm-hmm. So, no, I think the fall for us, for people that in my trade, is going to be wonderful. If they have managed to survive, it's going to be great.
Manuel Martinez is the voice we're hearing, and you also travel frequently to New York. Yeah. Fashion center of the world still today, isn't it?
Well, it's a bit quiet today, right? It's very quiet.
That they talk about a city that took a hit.
Yeah, very quiet.
It is election day.
Yeah, very quiet.
In New York City. Well, but how have all those tailors survived?
No, my friends in New York are taking a big hit. I do have a couple of rare individuals mm-hmm. that travel outside New York. They're doing well, or they're making clothes for the movies, and they're doing well. But the majority in New York, it's just it's very dry right now. I got in touch with some of my clients a couple of weeks ago. They said, Manuel, don't come until maybe September because we're not going back to work until September.
Mm-hmm. Do you think people still judge others? It was a given in the 50s and 60s that you were judged by the way you dressed. And remember, dress for success. And that was after the 60s and the 70s and 80s. Is that still the case?
Hey, look, I'm sure that even though you've been told don't judge a book by its cover, but whenever you meet somebody, whenever you see somebody, you're going to determine whether you want to meet that person. Mm-hmm. Does it look successful? Does it look smart? And they want to meet him. So, yes, I think people still judge a person by the way they dress.
All right, and I'm getting some emails at talk@talklouisiana.org for Manuel, and we're about to go to a break, but a listener does note that he's been to your shop, and there used to be a photo of one Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. on the wall. Is he still on the Wall of Fame in the Manuel Martinez shop?
Yeah, he's still there.
He's still there? He dresses pretty well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And for a 78-year-old guy, he's kept himself in shape. He looks good in his clothes.
Yeah, he does. I think he's got an eye for clothes, and he dresses nice.
He dresses nice.
He's got his own style, and he dresses very presidential. And so.
But just because he's on the wall doesn't mean you're endorsing everything
him. I have Ronald Reagan, and I have other
You have Johnny Cochran.
You got Johnny Cochran.
You have Nick Saban.
Right.
Nick Saban, former client of Manuel Martinez, yeah. By the way. The guy who made him start dressing differently, who made Nick Saban. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and in studio for a bit longer is Manuel Martinez. Three times this Baton Rougean was awarded the best in the world for his designs. Once in Paris, then again, second time in Venice, and finally in Berlin. And he is in business in Baton Rouge, has been since 1984. Man who knows fashion and appreciates fashion. And he believes that if you look good, you're more likely to have good things happen. 877-217-5757 for Manuel Martinez and talk@talklouisiana.org. Jason in Jones Creek says, I have a few pair of dress pants I wear to work with pleats. Are pleats still acceptable, writes Jason?
Pleats are coming back, and you're going to start seeing more in suits, pleated trousers with suits, one pleat. But trim, not very full like we used to wear them back in the 90s.
Okay.
But they are coming back.
What is in style today? What's
Well, of course, you know, the skinny trousers are still in the style. However, there is a movement for to make the trousers a little bit wider than what we're wearing today. The coats, the lapels, matter of fact, the lapel that you're wearing today that you're wearing today is becoming very much in vogue now again. So so that's the thing about doing something classic. When you wear something classic, some proportion to your body, you're not the first horse out of the gate, but you're always in the style. But, yes, Jason, pleats are coming back. So if they're not too baggy, don't throw them away or just get your favorite tailor to fix them up for you. And you're back in style. Maybe be setting the trends for Baton Rouge.
All right. See, this is Joe on government, remembering an appearance you had on our show talking about Nick Saban and wide lapels. He wanted to throw away a suit you designed for him, didn't he? Because he didn't like, he thought it was too garish, didn't he?
But no, he didn't want to throw it away. He didn't want to wear it. And when I designed that suit for Nick, I wanted to for him to look like he was ahead of his time. And they, without a doubt, he was the number one coach of the nation. And the LSU, he represented number one college. If you remember, he had to split the championship between him and O'Carroll, I think, the coach.
Pete Carroll, yeah.
The coach from
USC. Seattle Seahawks.
Right. Well, but he did wear the suit, thanks to his lovely wife, Terry, and Jael, who made the suggestion. Manuel called Terry and showed the suit to her. And she said, forget about it. Just don't worry about doing any other suit. I would make him wear the suit.
And he wore it.
And he wore it.
And he got so many nice compliments, he started wearing it everywhere.
He started wearing it everywhere.
He started overwearing it.
Yeah.
And then he started getting into fashion. And Les Miles, who took note, he came to you a few times, didn't he?
Yeah. But Les, great guy, too. I mean,
great guy,
yeah,
based on what we know now?
Well, I don't know about that. You know, I don't judge.
He was a great guy to you.
Yeah, exactly.
He paid his bills.
But he only came to me for special occasions.
Special occasions.
Right.
Okay. It's Coach O?
No, I haven't made anything for Coach O.
Mm-hmm. Well, O's kind of a husky guy. How would you dress him if he came to your store? He's not fat, but I mean, he's overweight, but he's not obese, but he's a big man. How would you dress him?
Well, he's you got to be careful with gentlemen like that, like no shoulder padding or very thin shoulder pads, and be careful that you don't make him look more round than he appears mm-hmm. to be. He's not round. He's just husky, like you say, more like a square. So you got to be careful with those individuals. To give him some kind of waistline so he has some kind of silhouette, opposed to having the coat look too much like a sack, straight lines.
Yeah.
And the trousers have to make a certain way too for him.
Well,
to
when you check somebody out, you're almost like a doctor. You're looking at their neck and their shoulders and their biceps and their waist, and you got to have all that information, don't you, to act appropriately?
Well, of course, you know, the body, every individual has, believe it or not, their bodies are completely different. And some of them have high shoulders, like a square, like the table, and you got to be able to make those shoulders more flattened to them. Some bodies have sloped shoulders, and you got to make sure that when you put a suit, they don't look like a torpedo. So you have to address all those points and their personality.
And a listener, this is an erudite listener, and it's the lady Stephanie, writes that when Pete Carroll shared that national championship with Nick Saban in the year of 2003.
Yes.
It was a split title at USC and LSU. His top assistant was Ed Orgeron. So I wonder who Ed Orgeron thinks won the national championship in 2003, USC or LSU?
How about that?
And now Orgeron's coaching the Tigers, and with Saban, I hear he's coaching a rival.
You hear that.
In 2003, USC or LSU? I would have a feeling that Ed Orgeron would say USC won that title.
I'm not going to comment on that.
Okay.
But you already made your comment.
Yeah, you know how it goes now. Speaking of public officials, I remember when Kip Holden was always a man who caught your eye when he dressed. But once on this show, you said he needs to look more like a statesman than an entertainer. Goes back to what you said at the beginning of the show. So if you're a mayor, a governor, a president, what is the appropriate attire?
Well, the appropriate attire, you should always look like you're an authority. And so the authoritarian suits are the dark colors, like your charcoal gray, your navy blues, and solid suits better than stripes or plaids and so on.
Really? So when is it appropriate for somebody to be a little more flashy, as you are right now? If you walk in a restaurant right now, everybody's going to take they're going to take a look at Manuel, and they're going to say nice things. But you're obviously, as you said once about your wife, there can only be one peacock.
That's right. Well, you have a great memory. I don't know about flashy, but colorful things during the summer make you look cooler. You finally put the darker colors. So it is appropriate. For example, if you're at a party, it is appropriate to wear more color. If you're going to the Derby, if you're going to some kind of fun thing, and I want people to know that I'm having fun. Even at my age, after 40 years, Jim, on the trade, I want people that I'm still having fun. I enjoy life, and color makes me look younger.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, well, I think if you found the fountain of youth, I can do the math. You're probably even a little older than I am, and you look great. So
thank you. Yeah, but I'm going to look great. You're talking about my gray hair.
Well, also, yeah, and even though you're a fashion guy, I can tell, unlike me, somebody professionally combs your hair.
No, I happen to do it myself.
Yeah, no, but you go to a professional stylist, don't you?
Yeah. I like to pamper myself. What's wrong with that? I mean,
well, you said once, and I was surprised since you're into more of the suits, but you said usually women, the first thing they look at are your shoes.
Yes,
is that right?
Yeah.
Really?
They look at your shoes and look at this beautiful lady next to me. Look at the shoes.
Well, you look at her shoes, right? Well,
right.
Well, women, it's more of a fashion statement. We don't wear high heels usually, but. So how much can you really do if you're a guy, other than shine your shoes and make sure you're not looking like a hobo?
Well, you just said it. You have to keep the shoes clean. I mean, and that starts at that point. And then, of course, wear a nice shoe, whatever. I always tell people, I said, look, buy the best you can afford. Don't accumulate things, but buy the best you can afford, even if it's one. Our society here in the United States our minds are geared to how much can we get for $100.
Yeah.
Now, where I come from is the other way around.
Well,
I want to just buy one thing and the best I can afford.
I used to work with a guy, Michael Hudson, who I think now is director of sales at WBRZ. And he said when he went into sales, the first thing he did was take all of his residual income and he went out and bought a new wardrobe.
How about that?
People do judge us by the way we look, but sometimes even more so in a profession like sales. You really have to look the part, don't you, to be successful?
Well, yes, you do, and you have to know your audience. You have to know who you're catering to, and then you dress accordingly, you see.
Yeah, yeah. When did you develop this passion? You wanted to be a veterinarian, I hear.
Well, that
veterinarians usually don't dress the way you're dressed today.
Well, it was my father's idea. See, when I was growing up, and my father ran the house like a general, and so he would tell each of us what we needed to be. And he wanted me to be a veterinarian because we had a ranch. Well, after I was exposed here in the United States, and I was very fortunate to live with a family very well-to-do in Lake Charles. And the way they entertained, they had these parties, and they dressed beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wow. I'm not even might be very wealthy, but I want to dress like these people so I can look like I have money. So then my passion started there at the very age of 15, 16 years old. And I saw what dressing did for me.
Would you ride a horse looking like that?
Of course not.
I bet you'd make a splash if you did.
Well, that would be the run. Now I would cruise the sea in a yacht dressed like
this.
But
we're glad you're still in the game and that COVID hasn't taken you and some of the other fine people in our community down, because you do important work.
It is
important to look as good as we can.
Thank you, Jim. And thank you,
Ben Manuel Martinez, and thank you for listening today. It was on this day, June 22, 1998, that I became an everyday talk show. It was 23 years ago. My first guest was Buddy Romer.
How about
23
that?
Years ago today. So thanks for helping me
stay
in this
man.
Chair. Thanks for listening. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support.